The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Goldie's Closet, episode 96. Thank you for being here. We are just a few days away from the new year, pre-filming this, pre-shooting, but we're happy to have you here and happy to have everybody on the Realm Network, Vince Russo's brand. It's just been such a pleasure getting to know all of you. And thank you to everybody extending over to our personal band, Patreon. Thank you for supporting us over there and allowing us to create some pretty interesting content. We love you. So this next guest goes by many names, but I knew him as Devin Storm or Crowbar back in my TNA early years when he scared the living shit out of me. He was in the Father James Mitchell camp. The rumor has it, the story goes that he liked to have some violent matches, and one of the things that he used, one of the tools of the trade, was a crowbar. So without further ado, let's give him a warm Realm Network round of applause for Mr. Devin Storm. First off, just thank you so much for being here, and I've really been enjoying reading just everything about you, and you sent me this message before we started, so I can't wait to dig into that and just... I start these shows out so many times. Do you want me to call you Crowbar or Mr. Whatever, Devin?
Whatever you want. My real name is Chris. Call me Crowbar, Devin, whatever you
Devin,
want.
Devin, whatever
it
you want.
Matter.
Yeah. It matters.
It's all up in the air right now. It doesn't matter.
No, I should have taken more time to get to know you when we were working. And as I said, and you'll see on the promo here, when it rolls in, like, I was terrified of the camp that you rolled with, you know, and if that's like a legit, you know, if it's a work for you, cool, if it's a shoot, but like, like I've read some of that stuff and some of the people involved in that. And I don't think it was a work for them. So maybe.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. You were what gonna say?
I'm probably the most boring guy in the business ever that just likes to do this stuff. So, I mean, you can't get more wife, kids, job, go to church, kids sports, and I like to go nuts on weekends here and there before the COVID thing hit. That's it. It's just I like to say I'm probably like one of the first wrestling geeks, you know, like the new crop of guys. They go to the show, they go back to the hotel. Very few of them tear it up now like the guys used to do in the past. I'd go out once in a while. But I was probably the first guy to bring my video games with me to the hotel and books. And it probably killed me politically back then. Yeah, I didn't know better, but I was just trying to keep my nose clean. But then it probably killed me politically. But that's kind of what all these guys are kind of doing now. It's weird.
It's not weird because, you know, I don't think you killed your stuff. I mean, if anything, from how successful that you've been with what you've studied in your practice and just everything like that. Like, I think a lot of those guys that thought that they were going to live forever, well, we all know that they don't. It's just real sad. And I was going to ask you right off the bat out of the gate, like any quick Tracy Smothers stories. You know, I saw that you worked with him and that one's sitting hard on my heart because
so
of how
sad.
He went, you know, like, yeah. I mean, he really did struggle with his cancer for a while and he tried to stay so positive. And every time I talked to him, I was like, you're going to do this and you're already across the, you know, the line, across the finish line, you're going. And it was just like, it's so hard when you see, and I mean, Tracy, you know, he partied and whatnot, but like, not like some of the other guys do that. I'm not surprised when something, your heart can only handle so many drugs and so much booze and pills and whatnot. And I saw Tracy really trying and that one hurt. Do you have any stories, things that you remember of him? Cause you were all about like your video games and stuff, but man, that guy just like slept, breathed wrestling, old school.
Yeah. And I can totally relate. It's not fashionable to say when you're in the business, especially as you get further along. A lot of the veterans like to downplay it. I effing love wrestling. I love wrestling. That's why I keep doing it. I have the business. I got the family thing going on, but I just love this stuff. I've enabled myself to be able to do it at my leisure. So I've never become bitter about it. It's just fun right now. And it's really empowered me to enjoy my time when I get to do it. It allows me to really pick and choose the shows I do, if I want to deal with BS here or not here. And in the grand scheme of things, it's made me continue to appreciate it as much as I do and just enjoy myself. But one of my first big independent matches was with Tracy Smothers.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was for the NWA heavyweight title. I'm not sure the exact year. I would say 93 or 94, maybe. Dennis Carluzzo had rights to the NWA at that time, or he had a New Jersey faction of the NWA, and he had a heavyweight title tournament, and he was bringing me up on the independent circuits at that time, and he had me work with Tracy Smothers in the first round. He was great veteran, hot veteran. Everybody knew him. Everybody was ecstatic about him. Everybody was really behind Tracy. I was this new guy. He could have just jobbed me out completely. He treated me so well, gave me a chance to shine for a really green kid. And I would see him intermittently over the years, and it would always be like we never missed a beat. Just a funny guy, nice guy, just a good-hearted guy. And you know what I'm talking about. He's just one of those guys. Is just a genuine, just good guy.
Yeah, he will be missed. And
absolutely.
I enjoyed the indie shows that I would run into him at. We did some business together towards the end there with Health and Wellness, and it was really cool. And he just was always wanted to help everybody. He wanted to just see the business continue and the legacy go on and on. And I just didn't get a bad, any bad vibes.
No,
dude, you know,
there's some people, you know, in the business, there's some guys you get on and you get like that weird heebie-jeebie vibe. There was nothing bad or off or shady about Tracy. Just a great dude.
The thing I get even beyond the heebie-jeebie is the competitiveness. Like, I just feel like there's no camaraderie sometimes. And that's way more in the music business that I deal with in entertainment. That's just like, it's so freaking cutthroat where everybody just... And I remember Tracy was just like, yeah, sharing a merch table. He didn't care. Yeah. He'd push somebody else's gimmicks and whatnot. Like, he was really cool. So he's missed. And then, of course, this year we lost Bob Ryder, which I'm sure you had some dealings with.
Great guy. Yeah.
Another great guy. Like, and I said on another podcast, I think I was talking with Cassidy Riley from the Hot Shots. And he's a nurse now, first responder. Like, he's doing great stuff. And wrestling and picking and choosing what he wants. But when we were talking about Bob, like, I remember when I lost my job at TNA and got fired, like, I had no money and I was just stranded in Nashville. And like, he found me work. He found me, had me clean his house, had me clean friends of his house, you know, found me some cash to make, paid me $20 an hour. That was very gracious. And just, he didn't have to, I was already done. He didn't owe me anything at all. But again, there are some really good people. I think there's more people than people give the business credit for. You might not know them by name, or they might be behind the scenes, but there's a lot of Bob Ryders and a lot of Tracy Smothers out there. And I enjoy and am so grateful for going back and like finding people that, and Malice was super cool to me. He was
what a great dude,
showing me some moves and whatnot. And then of course he keeled, and then Kurt Hennig was showing me some things behind the scenes. I thought, I want to secretly learn, you know, how to work. And then he passed, and it was just like, God, everybody that was showing me anything bit the dust. So Kurt was great to me. So I wish that I would have gotten to know you better. But like I said, the whole Father James Mitchell thing, like, it freaking scared. It really scared me. And then I research, and, you know, he really is into some of that stuff.
Yeah,
so no wonder I was like picking up some vibes of like, you know, like, it legitimately. But I mean, what a great shoot. You know,
it's
like,
so funny. And here's a great shoot here. He's into that stuff. And at the time when I'm doing this gimmick with him, I'm doing Sunday morning K catechism at my local church. So it's you can't make that up. So
did you know, Devin? Did you know that like that he was into other things? And I looked him up because we're doing stuff on Patreon now. And sure. I go back and I find the old bits and the old interviews that I did. And then I build an 8-minute kind of show, Tosh.0, around it. So one of the things that I saw was Malice and Wolfie D and him. You might have even crept in that one. And
I was there for about a cup of coffee. I was there for maybe 2-3 shows in that grouping.
But I remember and like somebody was picking at my hair and it really. And so I went to try to find him online and I was just like, whoa, I went down the rabbit hole. And it's like he really is with different churches of, you know, not the kind of churches that I go to. And I was like, okay, well, no wonder, but like they cast that really well. And he is into the darker.
Totally believable. Yeah.
If he's into the darker side of life, he was always cordial to me. I wouldn't say, you know, he went out above and beyond, but then again, I wasn't into that kind of stuff. And I was a bitch half the time or an asshole. So it kind of all washes out and balances out. But yeah, I was really surprised to see that, and that it validated why I had some vibes. But that's so funny. I wanted to know, like, did you even know that, or were you just?
I did.
Here's okay, but you're like, here's my shot, and you just professional. That's a good point for people.
I said, this is my shot, but also he was always nice to me. He's told some funny stories, and you know, it's not my position to try to convert people or to push my beliefs on other people. He was always very nice to me. He was always very cordial. So
yes,
as in my heart of hearts, maybe somewhere, I don't know. That's not my position to say, but I've never had an issue with him. I genuinely enjoyed his company. He never got into any kind of that preaching, that type of stuff with me.
Never.
And so I always enjoyed his company, ironically, as crazy as that sounds. And there's just some great stories, and he's just always good to me, and I judge people by how they are to me.
I do too, and I think that's such a good lesson for everybody, because so many people get all bent out of shape if like everybody at work doesn't agree with them or share their politics or their religious background or beliefs or their sexual preference or whatever. And it really like, there was so many characters running around, I'm sure, at WCW and at TNA. And I know you did it. How many dark matches did you do for WWE?
I guess maybe 8 or 9.
Oh, that's a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
And I can only assume, was it because a lot of those promotions share the same talent? Did they all have their own feeling? Was it like Twitter versus Instagram versus Facebook, depending, or was it pretty much the same scene in the locker room?
It seems like a cop out for me. Let me paint the picture. I had got my degree and I was actually working for WCW, ECW, WWF while I was going to college and physical therapy school. They knew that I was going to school, and they would intermittently fly me out here, fly me out there. And I was kind of a nightly talent. And I knew I had that. After I had graduated, I knew that I had the degree so that I could always fall back on it. I never really got caught up in this Fed versus that Fed. What I always went out there to have a great match. And I was, again, not fashionable to say as a pro wrestler. I was a kid in the candy store, living a dream, having fun, still doing it. So I really never got caught up in that kind of BS. It was just a good time, and it's still a good time.
I love hearing that, and I didn't get caught up in a lot of that stuff either, and that's why I continue to work to this day. And like I'm still friends with Vince and on his network, sure. And that's led to so many different things. I'm such a big fan supporter of not burning bridges and just doing everything you can to just keep everything good. But maybe it worked in my benefit. Like I wasn't like you where you're like, I'm going to consciously choose to go to my room and to not. Vince did that too. And he takes a lot of shit for it from people. I would go out for a little while and do my thing. And then I was just like, I'm not a big drug user and I don't drink at all. So I tried to do my politics, and then it just got weird no matter where you were. So especially for a girl.
Sure.
And so I left, and it's hard for me when I hear, you know, other girls doing the politics, and it's like, well, what, you know, if you go back to that guy's room, like, what's going to go down? Like I keep, no matter what convention I'm at or whatever, I keep everything at the center bar, and I'm drinking I make people drink me buy me a Perrier or sparkling water. I'm a cheap date. You know, if they have dessert on the menu. I'm like, okay, I'll take that. But I keep everything there just because I know where that other stuff's going to go. And then if you're seen someplace else, or you know what it's like,
absolutely.
You can always go back to your partner, your spouse or whatever. And you know where you're at. And that's a comforting feeling. And a lot of those guys, I love them to death. But I always said to them, do not bring your wives or your girlfriend around me. I won't ratchet out, but my face, we'll tell it, we'll say everything. And then a lot of the chicks, when we come back to BNA, and granted, I'm just going to go on the record. I am not perfect. I was no angel. I made more mistakes during my pro wrestling career than I've screwed up a lot of stuff. So again, all I can do is look back at how I was and see what wasn't working, tweak it and adjust and go on into the horizon a little bit, hopefully, and more intelligent, better, wiser. But I just remember a lot of that stuff. And I think, what you're saying about you, and a lot of people had a lot of great things to say about you, is just, I don't know, it's just if you walk the walk, and if you were teaching your kids and going to church and whatnot, it's a weird business to be
that
in.
That came later, actually. I actually was single during WCW and then after
WCW. Yeah.
So
you can just do whatever you want to do.
and I usually went back to my room.
You still didn't? You were single and you didn't?
Went out once in a while and I saved my money, which eventually was a great head start in life. And like I said, went out once in a while, but not too often. I would hook up my video games. I would read a book. And like I said, at that time, it probably killed me politically, but better off now.
Oh, so you are such a geek then, which brings so all these people keep popping about, I guess you're a big Star Wars tweaker. Like you love that
And the funny thing is I love Star Wars, and now it's fashionable and cool to like Star Wars. I like Star Wars when you had to hide about it. And during school and high school, you had to be a closet Star Wars thing because you were a geek and it wasn't cool. Definitely wasn't sexy at all or anything like that. So I was a Star Wars fan when it wasn't fashionable. So all these Johnny come latelys are jumping on my bed, but it's all cool and it's great. My wife loves it. My kids love it. So we're a big Star Wars family. So yeah.
If you could be, and we have Wrestling with MMA asks, if Devin could be any character from Star Wars, who would he be and why?
Boba Fett. Even as a kid, I always liked characters like Superman. I always thought it'd be cool to fly.
Oh,
Boba Fett got the jetpack and he could fly around without a ship. And I just think that would be an awesome feeling, an awesome sensation. So he has a cool armor. So when he's fighting, he has extra protection. He has the best scar. Lightsabers can't even hurt him if they hit him in the armor. But just being able to fly, that's pretty awesome.
That's a great answer. He's somebody that...
What kid doesn't want to fly? Everybody wants to fly. That'd be cool.
Did you ever think of working something like that into your gimmick wrestling? Okay, so you trained with Terry Funk.
Didn't train with him. Worked with Terry Funk in WCW. I went to two dojos with Dory Funk, his brother, but I was originally trained by Iron Mike Sharp. And then after I had learned the basics from Mike Sharp, I was trained by Bill DeMott, Hugh Morris.
But I read something about you pulled something from Terry Funk or some of those guys that were just a little bit more hardcore.
I would say the one match that really stuck out, as I was growing up and watching wrestling was a New York Knockout, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk. And that was probably the match that did it for me. And I say it was hardcore before hardcore was even a term. It was an I quit match. There's no rules. They used tables. They used an announcer's table. They used chairs. They used microphone wires. They used all stuff that would naturally occur at ringside. When I was with WCW, we had this thing where they would have a big garbage can filled with weapons, and it was put out there, and it was hockey sticks and golf clubs and kendo sticks and all this garbage in there, and we were told to use it. And I'm an employee or contractor, whatever, but I was told to use that. So that's how I did hardcore. But Chris Ford, how I, as a fan of pro wrestling, I love hardcore matches that use naturally occurring objects at ringside. They're not planted there. I love it when they pick up the mats on the arena floor where they're, where they used to take the announcer's table. That's not really an option in this day and age. The announcer's tables are gigantic. They're just big, big things. So now there's a big pile of tables under the ring. Looks a little phony, but that's kind of just become the norm, and I accept that. Chairs and wires and guardrails and stuff like that. And they used all these weapons. They made it look real. It was a great story. And Flair versus Funk just really is one of those flashbulb matches where that was one of the ones that made me say, yeah, I definitely want to do this.
So you saw that, and how old were you about when that happened?
I was probably maybe 15 or 16, okay, I guess.
Teenager. Yeah. Wow. So let's fast forward to this match that you had where they've got a bin full of all this shit to use. Did you ever use any of that stuff before?
Sure.
Like you, okay. So it, was there anything that you looked at and you're like, oh, well, this is the only thing that's left. I have to use this and I don't quite know what to do, or it working as long as you have.
You just do it. You know what I mean?
Did you ever do it and like really hurt somebody though?
Nah, it's, you know, I was always super careful with my props. I mean, I'm more of a fan of the
selling.
I call it the Sabu, Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn type of hardcore, where it's a wrestling match, but you implement the props into it. So it's just not a big whack-a-mole with props. There's actually wrestling and storytelling, and then you just kind of implement these things where it makes sense. You know, it makes sense for a chair here, or surprisingly, they go outside the ring and go flying through a table, or the story goes out to the floor and the guy pulls up the mat to expose the floor and slams the guy on the floor, stuff like that, as opposed to a garbage can filled with props that we're just smacking each other with.
Where do you get that from? Do you think you're, if you had to rate yourself, do you think you're the best at wrestling? Do you think you're the best at promo cutting? Because I've been watching your promos all last couple of days. Do you think you're good at the psychology? Or because it's 20 years later and I'm just starting to understand psychology. Like I always heard people talking about it. I'm like, what is this stupid? I just thought it was so dumb. I was so out of the loop, so ignorant, so stupid. Just, I mean, I would hear people talking about stuff and I was just like, who cares? This is just a show, you know, blah, blah. I mean, I had no idea. And now all of these years later, you know, once you get fired in hindsight, 2020, and you start realizing, like, I didn't even realize how good AJ Styles was, you know, and he's like a dear friend. And like, I was like, oh, he's a little guy, you know, like he's never going to do anything. Like I'm an idiot. Like I couldn't tell you. I remember seeing, TLC, and they had some opening act with three black chicks and they were kind of dressed and it was like real green, you could tell. And I was like, oh, these, who's this group? They're never going to do anything. And they were called Destiny's Child. Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I was so like out of it. Like, and what do you think you're the best at? Do you think you're the best at all of it? Like, where do you get telling stories from? Is it just because you're great at promos and you can just think of it? Or did you see it? Or did you watch Star Wars and all of a sudden things are speaking to you from that? From your, where does it come from for you?
It's a constant evolution. When I first broke in, I would probably be what people would call today a spot monkey. I would be flipping all over the place. I was a smaller guy for that time.
Crazy?
At that time, the guys were huge, and I was maybe 200 pounds. You know, large by today's standards, larger by today's standards, small for those standards. Me and this group of guys were the opening match on all the independent shows because we were so small, but we would do all this wild stuff. So when I started out, just like a lot of these newer guys, you know, part of the character I'm doing is more of a traditionalist, and I knock the spots and all the flips. That was me when I started out. And it was actually me for a lot of my career until I started to learn more of the psychology aspect. And as I went along more and more, I actually became a big fan of, in my head, putting a match together. As you're trained, when you're trained by old school guys, they had the belief, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, you should be able to call a match on the fly and just go out there. And that's great. And I can do that. I prefer to like visualize how this match goes, A, B, C, and what could be done in there to make it more dramatic. And I'm not just thinking about moves. I think about a look or a reaction. And that just came with maturity. And as I got older, I developed a punch for a good portion of my early career. My punches sucked. Now, I don't know how I got along without a punch. A good punch is so valuable, and it makes the story look real. It makes the violence look real. It makes it more believable. So it was an evolution from this kid. I was a kid. I broke in when I was 17, and I was doing all these flips, all this wild. I had no clue. I was a human crash test dummy, flipping here, flipping there, landing on concrete, didn't care.
How are you doing now with your body? Because when I talk to Francine, she says she hurts. Do you hurt or are you okay? Did you take decent care of yourself? Like, how?
It's an interesting story. I did a lot of wild stuff through the independents, through ECW, through WCW. WCW folds. I have that little thing with TNA. And I was there for like 3 shows. And at that time, I had just started working for Health South. It was a big health care company as an administrator at one of their clinics nearby. I had just purchased a house, had just gotten engaged. And TNA at that time said, money's tight. We need you guys to move down here.
Yeah.
We need to move down here and we can't fly in. But they were flying other guys in. Not right or wrong, but that showed me that there was writing on a wall that I was expendable or not one of the guys that they had to have there.
Yeah.
And I just bought a house, just got a great job, just got engaged. And at that time, Northern New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, independent wrestling hotbed, tons of work up here. So I transitioned from full-time pro wrestler to full-time physical therapist that did wrestling on the weekends here or there. And at that time, TNA's there, but that proves not to be an option. I had to make my really first adult decision I didn't want to make. I loved wrestling. I loved the product they had. Mm-hmm. I loved the group they had me in with James Mitchell and Malice, who was somebody I started off in wrestling school with, and Wolfie was great. I loved all those guys, and I saw an opportunity there. But it wasn't, it was time for me to make an adult, I had to make the adult decision to say, I got to stay here. I'll work the weekends. I'll do wrestling on the weekends. And I got to get a real job. I got to use my license. I just bought a house. I just got engaged. This isn't going to work right now. And if it's meant to be down the road somewhere else, it's meant to be. And if not, it's not. But this was, at that time, it was the smartest decision for me to make. So at that time, TNA falls through and ECW is bought out by WWE. WCW bought out by WWE. Everybody's trying to go to WWE and there's a logjam of talent just trying to go there or TNA. TNA is not an option and everybody else is trying to get in WWE. And I've had a few dark matches and in spite of insider saying, oh, he's definitely going to get picked up. He got a great pop in this arena, It's just a matter of time. Didn't happen. So I always tell people, you got to realistically chase your dreams. I'm a big believer in don't give up and keep plugging, keep grinding and all that. But I was able to read the scope of what was going on there. Everybody was trying to get into this one place and there was such a logjam. I knew it was very not likely for me to get there. I wasn't well connected politically. I didn't have a lot of cheerleaders there at that time. And I knew it just wasn't going to happen. I just knew it wasn't going to happen at that time. So I say it's no, but no is not definitely no. It's just not now. So I transitioned to real life. I started wrestling 1 or 2 shows on weekends, got married, had 2 kids. I left the Health South for a second company that I eventually opened my own facility, which is doing great, thank God. And so during that time, I would wrestle once or twice a month tops. I would do enough to stay active, enough to keep my cardio up, enough to stay proficient in wrestling. But I wasn't like the guys going Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, sometimes a double shot. So it preserved my body. For 20 years, I just did it kind of here and there because I enjoyed it enough to save my body, stay proficient, given the physical therapy background. It enabled me to nip little injuries in the bud before they became major, more major injuries, knowing what to do. So that's really what enabled me to keep going. And it enables me to do what I do now at 46 going on 47.
Amazing. You look amazing. And
oh, thank you. You too.
You're sweet. You sent me a message. Am I allowed to talk about that?
Sure.
Promotion.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You said after a while of not doing much right before the COVID, you were going to go and do some stuff with Ring of Honor, and then it went crap.
Yeah, we were there. We actually wrestled there in December and January, and then COVID hit. So that kind of washed out all that there.
Okay.
So it was 20 years.
20 years of what?
Since WCW folds. So I'm doing the independents for 20 years, pretty much full-time physical therapist, playing wrestling on the weekends because I freaking love it. And I know that's not fashionable to say, but I do. And I also meet my wife right after WCW, who was an independent wrestler. And a lot of people say wrestling weddings don't mix. We're 16 years right now with two kids. I'm in physical therapy. She's a registered dietitian. We have a facility together, and we share this crazy love for wrestling. We understand it, and we have fun doing it. So it was a huge blessing. Last December, we get a call to do this Ring of Honor thing, which was great, and we get to do it on TV together for the first time. And we've had this idea for so many years. We've done it on independence here and there, and then we finally get this opportunity, and it was just a really cool thing to do.
I love it. I was making sure that my my internet was plugged in. I didn't
know. No worries.
I didn't know that she did it with you.
Yeah.
Yep. That is so cool.
So, and if you watch that clip, I had a bodyguard.
At your therapy.
Giant dude with a big beard, and he kind of played like a bodyguard character for us at Ring of Honor. Great story there. I was working at the clinic, and my door opens up, and this freaking monster walks in. 6'4", easily 350, 360, what have you, whatever it is. Comes on in for elbow tendonitis, I think it was. We forge a great friendship. He says he's a big wrestling fan. He knows who I am. At that time, a wrestling school was opening up literally 5 minutes away. I referred him there. I helped train him. Fast forward probably 4 years later, and here we are. He was not a pro wrestler to start with. He was a patient, U.S. Army vet, great guy, big dude. And here we are from him walking in my clinic as a patient. So I'm out, and he's a great friend now. So I got to do Ring of Honor last year with my wife by my side and one of my best friends. So really cool.
Well, you put out great energy though. Just
thank you.
Fantastic. Like that you reap what you sow. So that's
thank
cool.
You.
And one of the people commented on the post saying, what did he say? Replying to all of us, is this when wrestlers look like wrestlers and not skinny virgins? So apparently, for you thinking that your 6'1" frame at 200 pounds wasn't, I guess, compared to what's going on now. I mean, I follow some wrestling, but I guess I just think, wow, like they're getting a really big push for like kind of looking like shit.
It's a different time. It really is. There are still some big guys. They're
lazy. I miss that, especially the females. Like I want somebody that is a superhero look to me. I want to like be inspired to like go to the gym and work out and lift. And I guess there's something to be said for body positivity, but I think a lot of the body positivity that I see in the females that I mean, I'm a girl, I can say this, is people making some excuses for like not doing a lot of work, you know, and they're eating really badly or they're making bad choices. And I'm like, you can be really positive about, you know, your vibe and your look and your weight and whatnot. But like when you start getting sick or you get an obesity related illness or diabetes or, you know, like then you can't be too positive about that. So I like when people look like they walk the walk and talk the talk, because it just same thing with like singers. And I'm sure my guys get sick of us always dressing up in full gimmick and whatnot. But honestly, who the hell is going to pay anything? You can't do anything. And when you can, coming out of the gate, like people just don't want to pay money to see somebody that looks just like them, or it looks like they just rolled out of bed, or so many entertainers are like that. And I love the world of sci-fi, and I love cosplay, and I love wrestling and sports entertainment. And I just like to come up with the more, you know, bigger than life things that you go pay your money for that ticket, and you really believe what's there. And not even like the gimmick, but like that somebody's, you know, the guys that I knew in TNA, the CM Punks and the Christopher Daniels and Elix Skipper and all those, like they didn't go out. They showed their face, had a steak dinner and some broccoli, and then not only go back to their hotel room, but they'd hit the gym at the hotel.
Sure.
Like those guys they're still working today, or Elix isn't. He took a break for personal reasons, but those guys are strong, lean, and making good decisions and crushing it. And I love that. So I think you look, you looked terrifying and amazing with TNA, and I've been looking at the, you're not giving yourself enough credit for that. So.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
What is it like working? Okay. You meet your wife and then you work with her. And for all the people that are listening, because we've got a lot of dudes, like what's your secret, or what's some advice that you can give people that maybe don't work with their spouse or partner, but they don't get along as much as they'd like to? Like, you obviously have to get, you're a great dude. And some of the people listening need to not be such assholes. So there's your first tip. But what advice would you give people on, like, how is it that you work? Obviously you get along with her. Like, how do you do that? How do you not get annoyed? How do you take disagreements and not bring them to work? Like, walk us through a little bit of that, because I think that's fascinating.
Again, it's an evolution. Definitely have an evolution. We got together. And when everybody gets together, it's great. It's all sunshine and rainbows and this and that. And then you move in together, and then you get married. And, you know, we've gone through points where, and I'm not ashamed to say it, we're in a great spot now, but yep. There were spots where you don't see eye to eye, or you just don't communicate right. And we would get into the self-help books. We would talk, and just more and more, we learned that you have to communicate and sit and talk. And for a lot of people, it's uncomfortable to communicate. A lot of people can't, they can't have conversations about true feelings. And we had to work on that. And we all carry baggage from our childhood. I was an overweight kid. I had a horrific speech impediment. I couldn't get out one sentence. And so I had a lot of issues as a kid. She had a lot of issues as a kid. So we came together, but we all had our own crap. We worked on our own crap, and also how we could be better as a couple. We actually, and I'm not ashamed, we were never in any kind of jeopardy at all, but we wanted to be great for our kids. We wanted to be great parents. We preemptively would go to marriage counseling just to learn how to communicate better, because we wanted that better relationship. We wanted to be great parents. And when you communicate better, even after 16 years, you have a great love life too, when you have that community. So it pays off huge. It pays off in aces in so many aspects, with your family life, with your kids, with your relationship with each other. We still fight, and it's, when we get in an argument, it's totally cool where I have to say, I'm really hot right now.
Yep.
I need to process this. I love you. I always said, I love you. And she'll say she loves me. I go, but let me do this. Let me go play a video game or two to kind of clear my head, and then we'll regroup, and then we'll squash this out. And that's what we do. And we've been doing it all this time. And so far, so good. It works great. And we're each other's best friend. And we have a lot in common, too. I think that's, she loves Star Wars. She loves Marvel, all this wild stuff. She loves wrestling. And that's huge. A lot of guys have spouses that don't get why they love this. She understands why I love it, because she shares that very same love for what we do. We love working together, and we're so passionate about it. We'll come up with ideas, and she'll say, this is better. I'll say, no, this is better. And it might even get heated there as what's a better way to do something. It always ends up fine, but it's a healthy clashing that keeps us sparring, and it keeps us like sharp and smart in our craft, I think.
I love that. And I think a lot of people get tweaked out about counseling because it's not only about working on communication. Of course, that's part of it. But there's so much that comes out even without counseling.
Absolutely. People,
they don't like to communicate and find out what they need work on. Like, none of us like to hear about things we fall short on or be vulnerable and have somebody say, well, I don't like you to do this. And when you can just get past, like, somebody's with you and they love you and they're just trying to make things as good as possible. I love the fact, I wish more women would understand, like, because I'm very dude, I probably have more testosterone than any man that I even know. And like, when I am hot, I just want to just let me be. And so many chicks will just poke the bear. And it's like, I need time to decompress and to think about things. And I'm the kind of person that if you just give, because I'm like a guy,
you got to cool down.
You just let me cool down 100% of the time. I will reflect on, shit, I could have done this better. I ran my mouth.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then it's so much better. Women, if you're listening to this, if you let the guy, or if you're like me, let the other person cool down, let them come back to you with what they did wrong, or they can correct, or let them self-correct. It's so much better than you standing and pointing the finger and blame and whatnot, because people don't hear that. When you give them time to silence the noise and to think on their own. I've dated a couple guys that were wonderful at, like, it wasn't even 15 minutes after I'm like, you need to leave. This is not healthy. Just go home, go to your place. Don't spend the night. And it's 15 minutes or less. And they're on the phone texting like, man, I'm sorry. I did that. And I shouldn't have said that. Or I saw the way that I made you feel, or why did I say that? And it's because you give somebody time and space. That's just so important. And I wish more women got the memo on that, because, man, they are upside your ass.
Well, that's one of our, she likes to discuss immediately, but she learns now that I get it. You want to talk about this, but I have to decompress. I'm going to do it as fast as I possibly can so that I could discuss this the right way. And we don't say a whole bunch of stuff we don't want to say. And,
Exactly. And
we've had friends that have gone to counseling just because of us. When we were going, we were super open about it. And they would say, why are you going? Is there something wrong? We go, no. And we want to keep it that way.
Nah, that's really cool and very huge of you to say.
And it just makes you go, like, we were here, but when you go, you just even closer. You know what I mean?
Oh, more, yeah. Tight. Yeah, definitely. And that definitely trickles into the love life and to the intimacy and all of that. And I think it's hard. I know that a lot of people struggle because they're in a relationship and maybe, like, they've fallen out of love, or they're just not feeling it the way that they used to. And I'm always trying to figure out ways to, like, help people rekindle that. And something that's probably, like, unhealthy that I do when I'm in a relationship is either I imagine him with somebody else, or I allow myself to get a little bit jealous, because it seems like when I get a little jealous, then I'm not being complacent. And then I remember, like, holy shit, I've got somebody really good. Like, she's finding him attractive and she's finding him attractive. And, like, I have to remind myself that other people are attracted to this guy too. And you better treat him like he's a big deal and like he's hot to trot. And I think sometimes when you've been together for a long time, like you forget that, or you just, somebody becomes like an old pair of shoes or slippers, or they're comfortable, or.
And don't stop flirting ever. Either if it's at work on a little text or little cute comment here or there, you got to let them know that, you know, they still do it for you and that you still care, and it's fun.
No, it is. And like, even when I don't want to, if I'm dating somebody, great. You know, if they'll be like, well, when they ask, I don't always do it, but sometimes I'll do it after the fact, like take one of those shots, you know, and then when they least expect it, I'll fire that off. And it's like, oh my God.
Who thought that this would turn into love and relationship with Crowbar? Who? Not me. This is a spontaneous tangent that I had no idea this would happen.
But it's so important.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Kevin, because, you know, you don't hear a lot of pro wrestlers going down this road. And so many people that are listening to this on the Realm Network, thank you so much on Russo's brand, everybody on our Patreon. I know all of you so well from being connected for the last 4 years on his platform. I know all of you, or a lot of you, are truck drivers and what you do. And I'm sure that they struggle with being gone or with intimacy or whatnot. It's just so important when, like, the cool people, now I'm going to throw myself into that category, but, you know, you definitely are. Everybody online today was like, oh, that guy's the coolest guy. He's the coolest guy.
Cool.
Like, it's nice to hear somebody really is nice and really is doing things right. And the part about being proactive in your relationship, you know, that's health and wellness. You're a therapist, like, that's just health and wellness across the board. It's really important. Even if things are not bad, but they could be better, go. And there's a lot of things.
And it's great for the kids to see, too. Our kids see it, you know.
No, you don't need to see what I saw growing up. We have somebody that asked, what's your new name going to be? Like, I didn't know that.
Got a lot of cool ideas. Depending on where this year takes us, it's not going to be Crowbar. I'm just not at the liberty to say it right now. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Here you go. You heard it here first.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to tease that for sure. That's really cool, though. I'm just so excited for everything that's going on with you. What can you talk about that the new year is bringing for Chris Crowbar, Devin Storm?
Just more promos, I guess, until this COVID stuff goes away and there's independent wrestling around again. You know, this with the COVID birthed this promo thing, and it's been going on probably since June. It's a lot of fun. It's something I never really explored before. I always knew that I could do a promo, but it was never in the Crowbar's character. There was never that need to do it. It didn't fit. You know, I would do a couple goofy things here or there, and COVID comes up and I want my wrestling fix, but there's no wrestling going on physically. So I actually bought mats for my house. I got a ring mapped out. I'm doing what I can there, but I wanted to try to explore something in a character that not a lot of people do. And when you hear a lot of the criticisms of modern wrestling, they say, and I agree, the athleticism on a whole nother level that we've never seen before. They're incredible athletes, incredible flips, all this, that, and the other thing. But a lot of the people criticize, saying that a lot of the guys can't talk, or there's no great characters. But there is, but there's less. So I wanted to explore this talking aspect, for lack of a better word. I had this idea for the character probably since 2006. But it's hard to get a character over on independent wrestling. You know, you're going out there, you know, 50 people to 500 people, maybe 1,000, but you don't have that platform to talk and to act out this character. So I've had this idea on the back burner forever. Then COVID pops up and I said, okay, let me finally try this and see what I could do with it. And it was kind of spurred on by Twitter people. I had joined Twitter in 2017, never really had the time to do a lot of it. You know, work full time, wife and kids comes first, kids activities, there's a ton of them. I mainly did a lot of Facebook because that's more my local friends. That's mm-hmm. also where my business Facebook is. So it was more hometown business related. So the Ring of Honor thing happens, they say, you really need to get on Twitter. That's where a lot of wrestling happens. So I said, okay, fine. So I get on. I got like 200 something followers.
Yeah.
Well, whatever they call it, poverty account, whatever it is. So I try to do some stuff, and I'm doing it in my spare time. And, just being a heel, being the character, the more traditionalist, yada, yada, yada. And I got some of the nastiest comments about me, my family, my kids. They hoped I died. But a lot of the comments I got over and over again was, who are you, Boomer? So I made that, the first promo I ever did is entitled, Who Are You, Boomer? And I went from there. It got a great reaction. And I said, wow, that was kind of fun. And with people seem to like it. And it just became an almost weekly thing as different topics would pop up in wrestling. And it's more controversial stuff. And it's some stuff that a lot of guys steer away from because they don't want to, they don't want to be too controversial or make this person mad or not. I love wrestling. Whatever is going on is fine. But I'm going to let my character talk on whatever. What are you going to do? Not use me? Okay, I got my job. It's fine. It's very empowering. It's very liberating that I could have fun and comment on some of the stuff that a lot of people say is totally ridiculous or can be taken as ridiculous. It's free. It's fun. And I started doing these promos, and I've gotten great reaction, great reviews, overwhelmingly from my peers as well as fans. We never knew you could talk. We've never seen you do this. And it never fit my character. And then also going back to what we said before, extremely empowering and overweight, not attractive kid, really fat, worst stuttering problem on the planet. I couldn't even get out. When we used to read in grade school, they would go down the rows and each kid would read a paragraph. I would panic to know it was the worst. And seeing myself and having the ability to do this has been empowering, and it's been a really cool thing. And the praise that I've gotten from peers, a lot of guys don't comment on Twitter itself, but they'll send a private message or a text and they'll say, holy shit, that was crazy. Where'd that come from? Or what was this? Or the way you moved your hand here, I use my hands a lot in this character. And it's been a really cool, fun thing. And if COVID ends and I just do independent shows and I do these promos, I'm entertaining myself, and that's cool. If larger opportunities come, that's cool too. I know there's a lot of gas in the tank. I know what I'm capable of. I know my body's in shape to still do a lot of the stuff that I did years ago. It's just a opportunity. I'm not well politically connected anywhere right now because I've been out of that mainstream for so long. So if it happens, it happens. Or I've even run shows over the past couple of years that drew exceptionally well. I know wrestling. I know business. I ran several shows that got thousands of fans on a whim in like my spare time for like fire departments and veterans organizations, this, that. So if that's what I'm meant to do, is to just run shows for great causes and be on those shows, that's great. It's we'll just see where it goes. It's real casual, and we'll see. That's all.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Where is your set? You got a really cool set that you're cutting those promos on. Is that like in your basement, or where is that?
Ancient Chinese Secret.
Oh, yeah. I was
remember
like
that commercial. Do you remember that one?
I'm gonna date myself, but yes. Do you remember what the product was?
It was some kind of soap, right?
Calgon.
Calgon, yes.
Wasn't that it? How they got this? Chinese Secret.
No, that's one of the things. I'll be on this during COVID. A lot of this new tech stuff is very intimidating at first. The first promo, when you go back, is against a wall in my bedroom. I go, I could do way better than that. So it's I really learned with a lot of help from Robert Frank, the guy on Robert Frank 316 that does all the crazy gym videos. He's a New Jersey guy. He gave me a crash course in tech, which he's been instrumental in me. And I, with his help, I really learned how to do this myself. I had a great crew, and they're still there to do stuff. But the guys from GoPro Wrestling, they would come and they shot some stuff for me, and they did it. And just my personality is I don't like to put people out. And if I want to cut something and I don't like the finished product, if I want to take 2, 3, and 4 takes, I want to be able to do it. I don't want to feel like I'm holding this guy up who's being super nice filming this for me. Yeah. So I had to learn and empower myself where if I get an idea for a promo at 4 a.m, I could wake up and I could just go do it. So,
isn't that great?
It was learning a whole new skill.
Yeah, it really is.
It's just me. It's all me. I film it. I edit it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you are absolutely crushing it. And when you do and are allowed to talk about what's happening and your new name, I would really appreciate if you would make a few minutes to come back on, because we definitely...
That'd be a lot of fun. It'd be awesome.
A lot of people so excited about you that weren't saying, we hope you died or did you die? Isn't it interesting, the stuff that... I had somebody reach out to me today and just said, I saw you on Hannibal's pod and his show, and man, the things that people say to you, and I just think it's hysterical, like that, because it really just reflects on them, like just how screwed up they are. Like,
I saw one of my favorites that was just crazy. Was, now my wife and kids are everything. They come first before wrestling. Even, you know, it's my family, my business. So I'm out there doing something like some kind of interview, and a guy, you're 40 something years old, chasing this stupid dream. I bet your kids have not seen you in 6 weeks. You're probably neglecting your family, pursuing this stupid stuff. Get a life. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what my life is. But it was so funny because I'm like, this is awesome. This guy hates me for no reason.
No, he hates himself because he never went and did anything with his dream, whatever.
Or he believed the character, which would be cool too.
If that's the case, then again, you need psychological help, but you know, whatever it is. What did you learn in 2020? What did you take home from all of this?
Very thankful. I've known a lot of friends, and I've heard all the stories about restaurant owners that have gone under or just barely scraping by. I'm very thankful. I thank God every night that I had a healthcare business and we were able to remain open. Our flow went down. Our population went down. We weren't as busy because patients were afraid to go out. So we lost money compared to prior years. We were still profitable, but not like prior years, which most people would say, oh, that's... I was thankful that we were open. I was able to pay my employees. I was able to pay myself. And we were able to keep the business going when a lot of other businesses weren't as fortunate. So in one word, extreme gratitude. And I'm like everybody else. It's, you know, you think about all the bad aspects of 2020. You're human. You want to be able to do this again. You want to be able to do that again. You don't want to wear a mask. I do everything that they say that I'm supposed to. We're all pitching in. We're all doing what we're told. We hate it, but it is what it is right now. But in the grand scheme of things, in spite of all these inconveniences and this extreme gratitude that we were able to remain open, I was able to support my family. And I feel really bad for the people that took a big, big hit this year.
Yeah.
So just super grateful.
Chris, Devin, Crowbar, tell everybody where they can find you on your Twitter account.
At WCW Crowbar. And that's it.
And Facebook?
No, my Facebook, I kind of keep for like my personal stuff and my business. If you, I always tell friends, don't put my Twitter stuff on Facebook. Because my character's a dick.
Yeah.
I kind of keep Facebook like just for like me and my family and my business, and I'm with the Twitter heel, I guess.
I love it. Everybody, at the end of the show, we always do this little clap gimmick, little golf clap. Clap for everybody. I gotta see you. Thanks, everyone, for watching. As always, stay safe.
A lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Goldilocks, and we are inside Goldie's Closet. I want to ask a favor of you all, whether you watch the show or not, if you come to our band shows, what have you, it's something that you can do to support, and it costs nothing and no time at all. If you shop on a very popular online website, I would really appreciate it if you would bookmark some of the items that you are shopping for. And if you could just simply do this, go to goldieknows.blogspot.com. If you go over to the right, all the way to the bottom, the About Me section, there's a link. It just says I'm an Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, it takes you inside my umbrella, and everything that you order, I can earn just some help and support to keep all of this going, to keep the band going. We've got a hefty vehicle repair. It's pretty substantial. So it would be really great if you could remember my link. We get some support. It's that simple. I love you all. Thank you for making the time to stop by and check out everything that we're doing. Mwah.